All right. Well, this is our first podcast.
Hi.
Hola. Hi.
Same person said hola and hi.
All right, guys. So, what are we talking about today?
Teenagers in our generation.
Oh, God. Here we go. Well,
we're all just a mess.
I think.
We swallow Tide Pods and smoke. No one of those two do.
As we both have our.
We have our vapes.
What? Ooh. Good job. Shoot. I'm not going to do that with mine.
You'll probably break yours.
Shy just slammed her vape down and the
pod fell out.
Yeah.
I am such a terrible owner.
You are. You know, it's okay. It's, we respect
you. You admitted to your problems.
It's we appreciate it.
All right. So, I think us teenagers need to stop thinking we're above others, to be honest.
Well, not only above, but below. Because we like to look up to celebrities and, like, when Ariana Grande. Or
like, even, yeah, and we can have that dream to be that person. And we can work towards being mm-hmm. who they are. Just because we're younger mm-hmm. and we have different things than other kids doesn't mean that we're lower or higher above.
Because yeah. I know with a lot about that, teens and just people in general like to look at other people and tear themselves down because they think they're less than or not worthy or just not on the same level as other people, which makes them feel even worse about themselves in the end.
Yeah. Like, okay, so I used to think that I was the lowest of the low at my old school. I used to think that just because I was the victim of current every day, 24/7, online, physical, mental, verbal, home, of so much bullying and abuse,
and the thing
that
is,
I was lower than
the
everyone.
The thing was, is with us, and I feel like it depends on what year you were born, and we're probably going to get a lot of backlash for this.
I'm sorry. We just heard someone out front scream. Ah! Yeah, you go do that.
It's other teenagers. Not the topic we're speaking of. But I feel like it depends on what year we were born, because for example, years 2000 to 2002, 2003, kind of, depending on what the topic is, we were at the pinnacle of certain creations, certain things that were being created, and how times were evolving. Because I remember early 2000s with, like, Fred, with beginning YouTube, beginning Shane Dawson, his humor was so,
how different do I put, than it is now.
So, like, if he were to make the jokes he made beforehand, he would have been shut down faster than anything. But because of that, the bullying we suffered through were considered jokes, and you're considered pansy, a snowflake, weak. If you couldn't take it.
Pussies.
If you just couldn't take it, and you couldn't, like, if you weren't able to take it and just move on with your life, you were seen as you were never going to get anywhere in life.
And I like to think of bullying as a serious thing because in 2012, there was a number of about 20 to 30 kids our age as teenagers and maybe even younger, committed suicide.
Well, right now, the highest rate, like, the main thing killing kids from the age of 10
to... Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline.
I am so sorry. I need to turn my sound off for that.
The ages 10 to, like, 21 right now, it's suicide. And I'm sorry, a 10-year-old should not be thinking about if they want to die or not.
Exactly. So my number one question is, why do people bully? And that answer is very clear in sight. From what researchers say, they say that kids who become the bully have been bullied. And they want to put their sadness onto other kids.
They pent up all their stress and frustration and think it would make them feel better to push it onto somebody else, not realizing it's going to make them feel the way they felt.
The sad part of it all is that's not always just the case of it is. Sometimes it's just them creating so much pent-up stress for their own thoughts, from themselves bullying themselves, from the pressure of wanting to be popular, because they see all these people on TV so popular, like, I gotta be like that.
Or I gotta be all preppy and pink. Mm-hmm. Or, oh my god, they're on the cheerleader team, I should go try out and maybe that's how I'll become popular. Or, oh my god, they're dating a popular kid, let's go do that and make me popular. And then they don't realize that they're not leading their own life. They're becoming followers of shows of TV or what they see in real life. What you need to do, in my opinion, is be a leader than a follower. Be who you really are. Don't be someone that's hiding under preppy clothes or under the mask of your own sadness and depression. Just come out and be who you really are. Because, like, I feel like the number one problem today is that kids tend to not be their personal image of who they really are. They tend to take someone else's image and make it their own.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so I've been bullied since first grade up to 10th grade, which is now. And for me personally, for the names I get called and for the things that have been said about me, they have it so lodged in my head that I actually think it's true. Mm-hmm. And that people have called me so many fat names, so many cursing names,
trying to bring them up or even trying to think about them will, like, bring you, like,
even lower.
And not only bring you lower, but it sets you back from the progress you've been trying to make.
Yeah.
So, like, for an example, when if someone with anxiety or even with depression, when you've worked so hard, when you've worked your way up to the point where you feel that you no longer need to self-harm, and then someone says, that doesn't matter, you haven't really made it to the point where you need to be, that pushes you back so much because you think, but all my hard work.
Yeah. And the way I felt has been, like, I thought that I was really fat when I really wasn't. I was actually the exact weight for my age. Mm-hmm. And you even seen it. Yeah, I would starve myself. I even tried to starve myself to make myself the way they wanted me to be. I tried being the person that the bullies wanted me to be.
And then they'd bully you for being too skinny.
Yep. Or they'll bully you for the way you dress. Like, mm-hmm. I dress the way I feel. Yeah. And the way I feel apparently isn't good enough or isn't rich enough for them.
Yeah. So with the elementary school I grew up going to, it was probably one of, like, the most struggles, because when I was in the second grade, I was given a letter that I was morbidly obese. At the time, you would think a second grader would not be able to read that letter. But my mom has an English degree, so I was taught how to read. I learned what words was, I learned what they meant, I would go to the teacher and ask what they meant. So when I saw on my BMI thing the school was giving you that I was morbidly obese in the second grade, I stopped eating. I gave my food to other kids. There were early signs of me having an eating disorder, because in kindergarten I'd give my food away to kids who didn't bring in food, or they'd say I even liked what they had on my plate. There were early signs And I'm actually very, very lucky that I have a family history of anorexia, which obviously is not good to have, but I'm also lucky that I had it because we were able to catch it to the point where it's not that bad and I've been able to go to therapy for it, unlike most people. And even, like, right now, because the bullying was so bad, because I've changed schools so often, that one school will have kids who are more overweight than others. They'll say, you're too skinny. You need to gain weight. And then I'll move from that school because I'm being bullied for it to a school with mainly skinny people. They're like, oh, you're overweight. You're overweight. You have to lose weight. And it got to the point where in my middle school, for all those 3 years, I was 115 pounds. Now, mind you, I'm not that tall, but I'm 5 foot. 115 pounds, though, is like mid-range.
Mm-hmm.
My body doesn't proportion it to make it look like I'm overweight or I'm normal size. It would proportion it to make me look bone skinny. So right now, I am at my max weight. I'm 126. Although that may not seem like a good goal, but for someone who has body dysmorphia and anorexia, it's like the biggest thing, the biggest achievement you can get.
Yeah.
To gain weight again.
That is. And I find it hard for kids who have anorexia to start eating again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it took my parents almost a year for me to start eating again.
Yeah.
Like, they would have to give me food that I didn't know was food. They would put it in a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would drink it, I would throw it up.
Yeah.
And my doctors, they gave me medicine, and it started to help me eat again. And then now that I moved, I became anorexic again. I'm barely eating as much as I'm supposed to. I'm barely drinking as much as I'm supposed to. I used to be 120 pounds. And let me tell you, 120 pounds is almost mid-range of a 17-year-old. Maybe it's a little below the range I'm supposed
to
be.
Just so anyone that it doesn't go by pounds, 126 is 57 kilograms. You guys can do the math for the 120 and all the other stuff, because I'm pretty sure y'all are smart enough to do the math.
But
I just Googled it.
But, for me, I go and check my weight every day because I exercise, I do what I'm supposed to do.
My mom refuses to buy a weight scale. That's how I was able to gain the weight again. She just refused to buy a weight scale.
Yeah. And, when I would always go check my weight, I would look at it and I'd be like, I'm too fat. Like,
yeah.
I would look at 120 pounds as I'm too fat. I gotta lose weight. So every day I would run, I would run, I would run. I would exercise, do everything in my willpower to become skinnier.
Yeah.
And, like, less than I'm supposed to. And the next day I would check my weight and I'm down to 110 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I didn't eat anything. I didn't drink anything. All I did was run, exercise.
Yeah.
And my parents saw me doing that again.
And a really big con to the thing with the exercising part is with it is you can't just tell someone, stop exercising.
Yeah, because...
Because once you hit that as your habit, and once you max out what you do when you exercise, your brain releases a chemical that it starts with an E. I don't exactly remember what it's called, but it's as addictive to as cocaine and heroin.
Yes.
And that's, like, I'm going to use Eminem as an example. He used running to help him fight his drug addiction, and he came addicted to running to the point where it was an unhealthy thing. And that's why. It's because he got addicted to it, kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know the full story there.
Exercise can be a big freaking drug to people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't understand why our brains work that way. It just does. But kids just need to learn to accept themselves for who they are. Like, if you dress preppy, if you dress the way you feel, or if you dress like like, you're going to a mm-hmm. beach.
But the sad part is social media, and that doesn't help us whatsoever, because no, we're thrown in our faces is that, lose this amount. Oh my God, look at Karen. She lost 25 pounds in a week, or something like that.
Or, oh my God, she's dressing like a slut, and she's posting it on social media. That's gonna ruin her reputation.
Well, now, my story's a little different. I've dealt with really bad depression and anxiety, and my depression and anxiety has been an ongoing battle for the past 2 years. Now, my weight struggle, I've never struggled with anorexia or anything like that. But recently, my confidence has been such a low that recently, like, I can't sleep all night. So then I sleep until, like, 1 o'clock, and then I wake up, and it's at the point where I don't want to eat. So I just think, oh, I can just go all day without eating.
Yeah, that's how I used to be. I still currently do that sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, today, I haven't eaten anything except for one small slice of pizza, yeah. And that was it. And maybe a little bit of the Chinese food mm-hmm. that you saw. And that was it. Like, I can go days without eating and just mm-hmm. drink water, and when I go back to eating, I'll be in the bathroom for an hour straight, throwing it all up until I'm throwing up blood.
For me, I think today, with what I ate, was I ate a bit of a small pretzel, a soft pretzel that my mom made, and I had, like, 3 bites of a piece of cake. I'm trying to remember what else I ate, but that's also another thing that I find with me battling with my anorexia, my body dysmorphia, and for anyone, because I forgot to mention this earlier, I'm trans. So, with it, I try to lose all this weight to match what my brain is telling me I should be. And because I know that I have to be a certain weight to get the surgeries I need to get.
And back again to the social media.
Yeah.
If you guys don't mind me changing the subject.
I don't care.
I think social media today has put a big impact on our lives mm-hmm. in a bad way. There is some cons to it. I will give them that. There are very little cons to it. But there are more there's very little pros to it and more mm-hmm. cons. That's what yeah. I meant to say. The cons of it is that you get cyberbullied.
Oh, yeah.
You get, whatchamacallit. You have people going up to you, talking about you behind your back to your best friend. And that makes you lose your best friend.
Mm.
You have your typical guys. You have your typical guys out there that want to control your relationship in a good way. With where both of you are going.
I'm gonna stand in there.
Where you guys are just going to work things out on a 50-50 level.
Mm-hmm.
Where you guys work together as a team. And I find that social media ruins that. Okay? Social media, there's guys on there that are pedophiles. Mm. You have people who add you and you don't know, and you just add them back for some random reason. Can you fill me a cup of water in that Spider-Man cup, please?
Mm-hmm.
Then you also have guys that you don't know sending you inappropriate pictures. Granted, there were some girls that do that too.
Yeah.
Alright. Guys and girls both do send each other inappropriate pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really annoys me. When you guys send inappropriate pictures back and forth, no one understands. But whatever you post on social media stays on social media, even if you delete it.
Oh, yeah.
It's on the dark web. It's on the... I've seen it. My teacher even pulled it up. He pulled it up on this certain website. And
not only that,
everything was there.
Not only do they post it with the websites and things like that, but Google has a specific place where they keep all your info. And even, like, Instagram, Snapchat, even though they claim they delete it, they have to keep it all in this space legally. And you agree to them being able to do this, by the way, in those terms and services that none of us want to read.
Because it's so long.
Yeah, so long. We agree to this. We agree to have them store it.
And we agree for them to see our location. Mm-hmm. When we apply for jobs, the internet keeps our information. They keep our phone numbers, mm-hmm. our addresses, everything. Mm-hmm. That's why I think everything should go back to paper with jobs. Mm-hmm. Because, okay, so I searched myself up on the internet the other day. All right, it had a picture of me with an email back from my favorite book author. All right? My school posted it on their school webpage. And it had my first name and my last name. Now, there's people out there that can claim my name mm-hmm. and claim my picture. Mm-hmm. Okay? You have jobs that take your social security over the internet.
Yep.
There's people out there that can get in their hands on that online application and steal yeah. your social security card.
Yep.
You have people out there with ways of hacking to take your personal info.
Yep.
And I feel like if we cut out social media, there's no way for them to do that.
And there would just be so much less stress for everybody.
And drama.
Drama. I feel like with social media, you should be like 18 or even a little bit older for
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Just so you have some form of common sense with it.
Definitely.
You shouldn't be. We shouldn't have a 9-year-old on Instagram right now because.
Or a 5-year-old using a phone on Snapchat.
And I feel like you should. If they were to move it till you were older, you would be able to build yourself mm-hmm. up and you would be so confident with yourself that you wouldn't take other people's comments to heart as exactly. much as if you were younger or a teen or something like that.
Definitely.
I find personally because I wasn't able to have social media until the 9th grade and I did move to and fro to places, I was able to build my confidence, even though like people bullied me to the point where I felt like it was nothing. Now, if I got a comment on Instagram or if I go onto PlayStation, I join a party with random people and they start making fun of me, I laugh at them because I'm sorry, you're so self-centered and so
self-absorbed,
self-hate that you have to take it out on me. I'm sorry, you're a 35-year-old with no job and no family and no one to care for you that you have to take it out on me.
And you see, like, that's another thing. Like,
no offense to any 35-year-olds out there.
No, she was just, or he was just, blabbering.
Picking an age number.
Yeah, he was just blabbering out of his ass.
Oh, okay. I didn't talk out of there.
No, but in all seriousness.
Sorry, we had to check something. He ran down the stairs. Shy came back and said, Shy, go get him. No, because you went like this and he thought you meant like go.
No, I meant like continue.
Oh, okay.
That was just like a good minute without. Sorry, guys.
Shy's trying to hide everything.
But no, in all seriousness, guys, all jokes and puns pulled aside.
Here's something I also hate with social media is people right now with social media are trying to. There's a love and hate side with this. I love the fact that people are putting a spotlight on mental illness. But what I hate is that people that are doing it are making it seem go happier and that you should have it, right? It's even better with it because you get more attention.
Like when they don't understand that you're making it as a joke when it's a serious thing.
That could also, if somebody were to see that with a mental illness, they could think you're making a joke of them. And exactly. That can trigger something else, and that can trigger somebody who has mental illness to do something.
Exactly.
Definitely. Like, all right, I was on Facebook the other day talking to my friend. And I haven't talked to this friend in years. Years, okay? And I was just telling him what's new with me. And I was telling him that I'm suffering from anorexia, severe depression, severe anxiety, severe social anxiety.
Yeah.
And like so forth. Generalizing. And he's like, oh, so you're joking, right? I was like, no, I'm not. And I feel like people this generation, along with parents too, no offense to any parents out there, but some parents take it as a joke.
Mm-hmm. But that's because of our joking culture, the way we joke about it, because we have to joke about the depressing parts to get through these times because of social, because of our technology, because of how our world is going on now, with it all, we just have to joke about it. But at the times when we do need to be serious, when we do need to be serious and we do need this help, and no one's willing to take you serious enough to get it. Like when you have when your friend his anxiety is so flipping bad, they're shaking to grab a glass.
Or even a knife.
Even a knife or anything. And their parents take forever to get them help.
Okay, so I'm going to throw in some experience here from my point of view. I've been through a lot of shit. I've been abused,
mm-hmm.
physically, mentally, and verbally. I've been, I've cut myself numerous times for many years. I've starved myself for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I gained anorexia. And I became so, like, far from trying to make friends because I thought they'd betray me. Because everyone that I talked to betrayed me when I was younger.
And the ones you did talk to, like, that didn't get that chance, like, I shouldn't say get that chance, too, because that's just cruel.
But you didn't get a chance to talk to them, for you to vent out to them what was wrong, to...
Moved.
Yeah.
They left. They couldn't do anything. And the sad part is me and Cheyenne are, like, a prime example of that. My mom didn't want me going to the elementary school I was going to, so she moved me before I could even get the chance to, like, talk to her. Even like, we were friends. We were close friends, and it was kind of sad, really, because neither one of us had each other's numbers or anything. And before you ask on how we were able to even communicate to and fro, like, at our homes, we didn't. We communicated at school. That's how we really did.
Yeah, like, Max, I talked to Max about certain things because I didn't want to scare him off when I first met him. And so we became really close friends, as he said, with everything. And when he moved, I didn't know what to do. I got bullied worse. I got thrown against the wall. I had been slapped for protecting another student. And I've been expelled for protecting another student.
See, the thing was, is what I've known, like, from the stories you've told me, it was like you were trying to take the place I was in for a friend. And that can be really dangerous if you don't know how to put up those mental walls. How to, I don't want to say cut people out, but cut the negativity out. If you don't know how to do that from the start, then it becomes the hardest thing in the world. Your mental problems become worse than others. But a really big con to it is when you do take on that role or take on that place, you block all the other people that try to help you out. Like, to the point where my depression and my anxiety will come from...
I'm sorry. I just, like, was going to look like a dragon.
And no,
like,
no, no, no. What happened was, I took a hit off of my jewel, and I slowly let it out, and I whispered, I looked like a dragon, and I didn't think they would hear me over him talking, and then then Bree started laughing, and then I started laughing, and then it got to him.
Yep. But. Oh crap, what I was gonna say. But you end up not letting other people in. And when you do get to that point, with my depression, for example, I have a hard time confronting people with my problems. I don't like telling people because I personally feel if I go to tell you, it's going to hurt you. If it hurts you, it's going to double back and hurt me even more because I hate hurting people.
Yeah, like me, I have a big heart. Mm-hmm. Because I get that trait from my dad. Mm-hmm. And I never learned how to defend myself until I was old enough. My mom wanted to teach me how to put up the mental walls. And if the person ever got physical, she wanted to teach me how to fight. And she always told me, if they throw the first hit, nail them. And I always thought that I'm a pacifist, so I don't believe in violence. Mm-hmm. I feel like violence today is the biggest thing out there. Mm-hmm. Because you have kids. Recently, a kid threatened to shoot up Ridley High School. Mm-hmm. Like,
Sorry about that. We had to make sure if her parents were coming or not. But a kid recently, at our closest high school, a kid tried to, threaten to shoot up the school. And it turned out to be a warning. So, with that, that's just scary in general. And I feel bad for the kids who go there. Do go to Ridley High School. It's like the biggest thing to think of. Like here in America, the kids have to worry about if the kid next to them is going to be the one that kills them. And if that's the thing,
then why have violence in the first place? Mm-hmm. So, like, me today, I think only adults should carry them, but, like, not where the kids can get their hands on them.
See, that's one of the things. So, I'm fine with families having guns. I'm fine with people owning guns. I feel we need to enforce the rules we have now. We need to enforce them to the point where there are no loopholes. And if you do try to make a loophole, you're like, no. That ain't gonna work, buddy. You gotta follow this law here and now. It's how it's done.
Yeah. Like, there's kids or even adults who go around and shooting people they hate. Like, mm-hmm. They'll walk up to the person they hate one day and be like, bang, bang. Like,
I feel that there should be only certain guns we are allowed to own. I get it is our First Amendment right to own guns. But we don't really know what that meant. We don't know if it's we the people own the guns or if it's we can own guns to hunt for ourselves.
And I feel like you don't know what position somebody is in. So you don't know what they're planning to use that for, which is kind of scary for people because you don't know what they're planning to do.
Even worse, kids with depression, mm-hmm. If they're down to the point where they want to end their lives,
they're gonna see
that gun laying there on underneath their parents' bed, or they know to say the passcode, or they know where the key is to that safe gun is hidden. And they can take that gun.
That can just be the final straw for somebody.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, it's here.
Well, I know it's here, and I know this password, or I know where this key is, and I can unlock this, or I know where it is, and I can take it and go somewhere where no one will ever find me and take the last bullet to end my misery. Mm-hmm. When kids don't know how much pain that the people who love them,
that puts it on other people.
Yeah, and they're gonna feel like shit because they're like, oh my god, I couldn't help my daughter, or I couldn't help my son, or my nephew, granddaughter, niece, grandson.
And the sad part is we're taught in school that there are signs to someone that's about to lead up to this. What the biggest problem is you're teaching those kids the signs. They're the signs.
Yes.
So, which teaches them even more, I can hide this better now.
Yep. Yeah. And if you actually wanted the kids to open up, you wouldn't put them in an environment where they feel like they don't fit in. Mm-hmm. You would want to make the kids feel so equal to each other that they won't have to feel like they're too poor or too preppy or too skinny or too fat or this or that or the third.
No, so no one tries to get up to the point that we're saying, oh, they need to share everything. All of our ideas have to be the same.
No.
We're not doing that. What we're trying to get our point across is that the self-hatred and trying to push your self-hatred onto others needs to stop, or our generation, our kids are our next part. They're done. They're dead. Because the sad part is our suicide, it's on the rise.
And it's getting worse.
Although, old folks, you are what we are now, like what we look up to. But if you can't help us, if you can't help save ourselves or try to understand and help us, your future may not look as bright and happy as you may want it to be, because we're 100% of your future. And if we're too focused on how we're going to kill ourselves, you're just going to be stuck with a gleamy dark hole.
Well, I feel like back to what Max said, it's going to jump back a little bit. When teachers or adults, when they talk about, like, the symptoms to look for suicide or depression or things like that, if somebody fits into them, that can make them feel so much worse and feel like, oh, well, then I fit into that, so I'm a burden, or I just don't deserve to be, which just makes everything worse in the end.
See, it really does. And I get schools are telling us these signs because they need us to know. And yeah, we need to know. We really do. And there really is no way to truly spot them and prevent it, because we're just going to create new and invented ways. Mm-hmm. And if we really wanted to kill ourselves, we can. But that leads me back to my other, like, the topic I was just talking about, how older people, they need to help us with this. We can't be just on our own with everyone saying, oh, we didn't do that in our generation. We're a new generation. We have new technologies. But we need the wisdom you had prior. That's not, oh, you're just being weak. You're being pansy. You're being all this. Because right now, our suicide rates are almost as bad. I don't remember. Like, last time I checked, and like, it was almost as bad as the Great Depression. That's where we're at. I don't know if that's still the case. I was in middle school at that point, so I don't know if it's gotten better or it's gotten worse. So, we're gonna try to get more facts on that to see if that's still the case. I don't exactly remember what site I got that from, so I can't tell you if it's, like, if it was, like, good info or anything like that. But the sad part is, of it all, is that anyone would want to take their life.
Okay, so I just looked it up, and it said the suicide rate went up 33% in less than 20 years. Yet, they're still funding lags behind the other top killers. And I found this on USA Today, which is like a news website.
Okay.
So it says more than 47,000 Americans killed themselves in 2017. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is the CDCP, reported Thursday, contributing an overall decline in U.S. life expectancy. Since 1999, the suicidal rate has climbed 33%. And it also says that people killed themselves by alcohol and substance use, mm-hmm. by isolation, smartphones, which means like cyberbullying, mm-hmm. and stuff. I don't know how climate change will have an effect on it, but it says even climate change has been found to have roughly the same effect on increasing suicides as an economic recession.
Well, I know some people, they suffer from seasonal depression. Mm-hmm. So, like, in the winter, somebody could feel so low, but then once it starts getting warmer, like in the summer, they could feel better because it's, mm-hmm. less droomy and rainy and it's more shiny and, yes. sunny, so
and
they feel better.
For some people, it could be the complete opposite. They feel happier in the winter. God, and then save me if I know why, but that's a thing, and it goes with climate change, and so many difference, and I get...
It's Dylan jumping on his bed.
It sounds like something else. I'm sorry if y'all can hear that. No one's having the you-know-what in the house right now.
No one at all. But it also says, it says that money to research and combat suicide continues to lag behind other leading killers and even non-fatal conditions. The NIH, National Institutes of Health, the largest public funder of biomedical research in the world, spent $68 million on a suicide last year. So they researched a suicide. And I don't even know how that's possible, but it also says if it spent nearly five times that studying sleep and 10 times more on breast cancer, which killed fewer people in 2016. And that's really sad that suicide has a higher number than cancer,
yeah,
than any type of cancer. And it also says that NSPL, National Suicidal Prevention Lifeline, says that, but, and it says the director of the National Suicide Prevention Line, which is John Draper, says, what I'm just painfully aware of is that all of the areas where the top 10 causes of death in the United States have gone down, have received significantly more attention. There's been so much more spent into every one of those causes of death than suicide. ... If you didn't do anything for heart disease and you didn't do anything for cancer, then you'd see those rates rise too.
Yeah.
Which doesn't really make sense, because how are you going to say that suicide is going down when it clearly is going up? You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're the director of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
But that doesn't count for all the people that don't call it.
Well, yeah. Including myself.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I don't know anyone that even has that number saved in their phone. You have it saved?
I have the crisis hotline saved in mine.
Yeah, I had the crisis hotline.
Everyone's squeaking this in the bed.
Nothing's happening.
Yeah, nothing's happening. We wouldn't be inside the home if it was.
I'd leave in an instant.
So
my dad called me, be like, yo, where the you at? Dylan has someone in his room and they're doing stuff, so I left the house because I didn't want to hear all that
screeching
and squeaking and like, no, I'm good, I'm bye. Let me know when he's done. I'll be over at my friend's house. I ain't dealing with this. Yeah. No.
But with it, other than you two, I don't actually know anyone that's tried or even bothered to call the suicide helpline. And the people that I knew one person, but it didn't help whatsoever. And the people didn't even bother to get 911 over to their place.
So I'm just going to wrap this up with a quote that I found, and we can continue this podcast next time. So the quote I'm going to end this podcast with is, "We tell stories about bullying or sadness like it's a fairy tale. There's probably real science in there, and we just haven't decided to treat it like that. We're telling stories about why people kill themselves that aren't scientifically based, that are very inaccurate, and are just the easier stories to tell because it's much harder to say we don't know." And this is by April Foreman. He or she is a clinician on the American Association of Suicidology Board of Directors. So we're going to continue this podcast next time. I hope you guys enjoyed this. And we all send you good lucks.
Yep.
All right. Bye. See you guys.